Well, a team of sociologists led by William D'Antonio, who's a professor at Catholic University, just published a survey that's got a lot of media attention because it shows that there's this kind of disconnect between people's beliefs in Catholic doctrine and people's sense of their viability as Catholics. So I'll give you one example. 40% of people in the survey evidently said that they don't accept the doctrine of the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist, which is a pretty basic Catholic doctrine, and still say, but we're good, faithful Catholics. The one that got my attention, though, was 88%, I mean, so an overwhelming majority of people said that what really matters is being a good person. It's what you do matters, not so much what you believe. There was a follow-up to this in the Chicago Sun-Times, and they talked to a Catholic on the street who said, you know, it's what's in my heart that matters, not so much what the church teaches. Again, I was struck by this kind of falling apart between doctrine and ethics, doctrine and practice, and the clear favoring of ethics over doctrine. And if you want to, you know, trace this back historically, you can do it pretty easily by looking at the work of Immanuel Kant, the 18th century German philosopher. Kant famously said in his book called Religion Within the Limits of Reason Alone, he said, look, religion comes down to ethics. That's what it's fundamentally about. Doctrines, dogmas, liturgies, and all that are fine in the measure that they contribute to good ethical behavior. If they don't, they're irrelevant at best, problematic at worst. So Kant drove a wedge between doctrine and ethics. And I would dare say many people in the West, and see this survey reflects it, many people in the West would agree with that instinctually. They'd say, you know, deep down, what matters is, are you a good person? And then, you know, what you believe, well, that's kind of up to you, and that's more subjective. But what really matters is, are you a good person? Okay. Now, see, what I think is really dangerous, I'm not with Immanuel Kant. I think what's really dangerous is precisely this bifurcation, precisely driving this wedge between doctrine and practice. And here's why. Without knowing it, a lot of the ethical practices are in fact grounded in fundamental doctrines. And so when the doctrines become marginalized or rejected, or when we have a cavalier attitude about them, in fact we are undermining many of these ethical directives. So let me try to show it. I think you can show it in a lot of ways, but just in a couple of ways. Being a good person, right? I bet most people would say that means that you're a person of love. You're a loving person. That's what it means to be good. That's what they look to. That's the criterion. Is that a person of love? Well, what is love? Love, as I've said very often, is not a feeling or a sentiment, not a private subjective conviction. Love is willing the good of the other, as other, meaning love gets you out of this sort of black hole of your own subjectivity, your own egocentrism. If I'm kind to you, that you might be kind to me, that isn't love, right? That's just indirect egotism. Or if I say, well, I'll be just to you, that you'll be just to me in return, that isn't love. That's just a sort of clever way to be self-interested, right? What's love? See, love is a very peculiar thing. Not just many splendor. It's a very peculiar thing, too, because it means I've broken free of that self-reference. I want your good for you, period. No strings attached. No reciprocation required. The Church has said traditionally that love, so described, is a theological virtue. See, Aristotle didn't recognize love. It wasn't one of the virtues that he recognized. The Church identifies love, as I've been describing it, as a participation in God's way of being. See, God, who has no need, God is God. God is perfect, absolute. God has no need. Therefore, God alone can truly want the good of the other for the sake of the other. God can operate in a totally non-self-interested way. And see, when we do that, when we're capable of that, it's only because we've received an infusion of grace. We've received a participation in God's own life. Here's the problem. Get rid of God, or language about God, or the doctrines that describe God. In time, that love that I've been describing will also be attenuated. It will also evanesce. Love that we so admire, see, in the ethical order, is a theological reality described by doctrinal truths. Okay, that's the more subjective side of the equation. Now look at the objective side. We say to love, you know, is to respect the dignity and the freedom and the inherent worth of every individual. No matter gender, background, race, education, every human person, we say, decent people would say, is worthy of this sort of infinite respect. Now see, again, we take that for granted, but think about it. Why is that self-evidently true? I would argue it's really not self-evidently true. What makes it true is a theological doctrine that every person has been created by God and destined for eternal life. That's why the person is properly seen as a subject of rights, freedom, dignity, equality, and inherent worth. Now, if you doubt me, take away God from the equation. Take God out of consideration. What do you get? We'll look back at classical times. Would Aristotle or Plato or Cicero have thought that each individual person, every person, is the subject of rights, freedom, dignity, and infinite worth? Absolutely not. You know, for the classical philosophers, a handful of people, the aristocrats, the virtuous, the well-educated, were the subject of rights and freedom and so on. The vast majority of people, Plato, Aristotle, Cicero thought, should do what they're told, you know. More to it, a lot of them felt that children who were malformed should be exposed to the elements, left to die. And a huge number of people in the classical world were slaves. And the great philosophers thought that was natural. Many people were naturally destined for slavery. Now, fast forward to more contemporary times. Look at the great totalitarianisms of the last century, where God was systematically denied. So go to Soviet Russia, go to Hitler's Germany, go to Mao's China, etc. What do you find? You find tens of millions of corpses. Well, Lenin put it very succinctly, didn't he? You want to make an omelet, you've got to break a few eggs. You know, the idea there was, hey, you want to produce this perfect communist society, well, you've got to kill some people. Every person's the subject of infinite right, freedom, dignity, worth? No way. No way. On the contrary, see. Well, is there perhaps a little connection between the explicit systematic atheism of these regimes and this attitude? Yes. It seems to me it's very hard to deny it. When you deny certain doctrines like the doctrine of creation, the doctrine of God's existence, then love begins to disappear rather quickly. You know, oh no, that would never happen. You bet it'll happen. It happened in our own lifetime. It happened in the lifetimes of our parents and grandparents. You know, the point is, this is a dangerous business when we drive Kant's wedge between doctrine and ethics. When we say so blithely, oh, it doesn't really matter, you know, what you believe, it's the kind of person you are. The kind of person you are, if by that you mean a person of love, depends very much, depends radically upon certain key doctrines. And that's why doctrine matters, precisely because we want to be people of love.